Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Expert Dale podcast to fulfill your mind with the virtues of life. I'm your host, Umang Panchal, inviting you to join us at Expert Dale podcast, where we meet some enormous personalities from the world and listen them to learn from their stories. Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Expert Dale podcast. I'm your host, Umang Panchal, inviting you to another excited episode of the Expert Dale podcast. And friends, last night, I just visited a restaurant and I was constantly thinking about whether I will get a good services or not, or whether I will get hospitality. But now the thing is, hospitality, that's the new word. Exactly, that's what I learned from a very important and amazing TEDx talk by our today's guests. Sounds interesting, no? Exactly. But let me share some important facts of our today's guests before diving into the subject. That she started her journey becoming an entrepreneur at the very early age of like a 17, and then she never looked back in her life, and she became a restaurant owner within a couple of years in her early career. She also became a great and successful employee of a company related to the hospitality management, and now she is the one who is helping hundreds and thousands of restaurant owners as their coach and consultant for the hospitality management business. Now we can imagine her personality as a tremendous entrepreneur, but my friends, please don't forget that she also got a title of Miss Georgia in 1995. She is the perfect example of a single personality with achievements in different levels of the businesses. So with kind regards and huge respect, I would like to invite our today's guest, who is a very beautiful personality and a charming person. Also, she is a great and amazing speaker, and today she is our coach for the hospitality management. So please welcome our today's guest, Anna Dolce. Welcome, Anna, on my show, Expert Dale Podcast.
Thank you, Umang. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Anna. And you look so amazing and beautiful today.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's get started talk with Anna in this amazing episode. But before going further, Anna, I would like to say that your career is amazing. And the subject we are talking right now, the hospitality management and hospitality, is also different than many of the subjects that I learned before. So now let's go ahead with this thing. And as I know you, that you started your career at the very early age of like 17 to becoming an entrepreneur. So how did you start to think about the entrepreneurship as the age of like 17 only?
Okay, 17. So it's a good question. I think I would have to give you some little context to it. I think what you're asking is, how did I develop like the mindset? How did I even think of starting a business versus how I did it, right?
You know, yeah, exactly.
You ask that mindset. So I think the mindset came from, honestly, my situation at the time, which is I grew up in Georgia, the country. For those of you who are wondering, Georgia is a country in Europe. It is south of Russia. It is located south of Russia and north of Turkey on Black Sea. And it's a very small country. I grew up there. And in the 90s, when I was growing up, their political and economic situation was very chaotic. It was a time when Soviet Union was falling apart. There was a lot of turmoil in the country, a lot of not so good relations with Russia and so on. So it was politically a very hostile situation in Georgia. And I honestly was even surprised how they were holding a beauty competition. You know, I didn't think arts would sustain all that chaos in the country, but they did. So okay. After participating and winning a few beauty pageants, it was kind of a natural transition for me. I had developed relationships as well as skills to connect the relationships and kind of to connect the dots. I admit it's an early age, but somehow I had the wits and understanding that, hey, this can be a business, because I know people, talent who are looking for work. And I know producers and directors and live shows who are also looking for talent. So I kind of combined all of the skills that I had, which was mainly people skills and I guess a little business know-how, and realized that it was I was naturally good at it. You know, I was merging the two that I knew, if that makes sense. So that's how it all started. And the mindset was, honestly, it was more desperation than inspiration, if that makes sense. Because in the country, there was the situation, economic situation was so bad that you could not survive, let alone thrive in the country. There were no jobs. People were massively unemployed. There was no way of making it, so to say, like we have opportunities here in the US. It was definitely not the same. So I think I was trying to kind of create something, and that's what happened. I created a talent agency.
Wow, this is so amazing that very turmoil situation ignite you to try your passion. And you started to make a connection. And by that connection, you feel that I have a talent regarding this kind of things, about like a different kind of talent people have, but they cannot show because of some kind of resistance. But you have shown that in front of the people, in front of your connection. And that makes sense that people understood you, that she has something that we need to use and we can utilize her power in very different way. Wow, this is an awesome story.
Good way to reflect. Yes, that's what happened. You know, looking back, I can say, yeah, I'm proud of it. But, you know, sometimes we look back and you're like, oh, that was me. I did that. How did I even have, you know, wits to do that? What made me, you know, we probably never going to know exactly why. But yeah, that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Wow. And I like this point. When you look back at your story, you think that whether is he me? But yes, yeah, at that situation, your work, your ethics, your power, your personality, and the skill that you have developed throughout growing your career is really, really awesome. And I admire you for this kind of situation when in even the bad situation, you grow exponentially. That's awesome. So nice. So now I was thinking about you and... you have said that it was the competition, it's the Miss Georgia competition. Wow, it's awesome. And it was so awesome to have you over here, the Miss Georgia of 1995 over here. And I can feel the beauty right now. As always, I say to you at the first moment that you look so beautiful, but I can feel it as well as, and also the natural beauty and inside beauty of yourself. Mm-hmm. But now I am interested that you are an entrepreneur, but you have done this competition as well. So what was your motive to do this Miss Georgia competition? And also, what did you learn from this kind of competitions?
Mm-hmm. Good question. So the way it transpired, Umang, is I was sitting in my high school class. I don't remember what class it was. And I was just minding my own business. And somebody came in, a couple, like in their 30s, 40s, whatever. The couple came in and you can tell they were artists of some sort. They came in and they scanned the room and they talked to the teacher, and then the teacher stepped out and then they asked me to go out with them out of the class. And they basically scouted me out of my high school class to participate in this local. My first pageant was a local pageant, like a citywide pageant.
Okay.
And I came home and I told my mom, and my mother was pro. She actually approved. She knew the people that came in because there were famous ballroom performers and dancers in the country. Wow. They actually have a lot of, they have a name, like in Georgia, mm-hmm. they are pretty known. And so my mother, being a career ballroom dancer herself in her past, she knew them. She knew their names. And she said that she trusted them. And she said, you're in good hands. And I would approve that you do this, because her understanding or her approval was based on being on stage gives you life experience. It's not just, you know, you go on stage and you do this silly little thing. And that's it. It actually teaches you a lot. And she wanted me to go through all that. And later on, I found out what those skills were. I mean, it definitely taught me so much. I mean, I can tell you that first time I stepped up my foot on stage, when all the lights are shining on you and there's a huge audience and everybody's looking at you, scrutinizing every one of your moves. I mean, your mannerisms, how you look, where you look, what do you look like, what are you wearing? Every single inch of your body is scrutinized. It's not an easy thing to go through. So I had a moment when the first time I went, it was kind of like, my line was I was gonna walk out, get in the middle of stage and walk down the stage and stand at the edge of the stage and greet the audience. And that was terrifying. When I came out from the backstage, I came out, stood in the middle, and I almost walked back while all the lights were shining on me. Can you imagine? You come out on stage and all of a sudden you run. Well, I didn't run. It didn't happen. But for a moment there, I had a thought, should I run or should I stay? And I stayed. I stayed. And I think that was a big lesson in courage. You know, what are you going to do in that moment where you can go back, but you can also go forward? So that was my first lesson, probably first big lesson. But also, you know, it taught me confidence. We go through grueling as a pageant. When you enter a pageant, there's a grueling preparation. Mm-hmm. There are so many things that you're taught. I mean, you're taught how to walk, how to speak, how to interview. Public speaking was a big part of it, especially in Georgia. You know, there's a stigma attached to beauty pageants worldwide that, you know, it's all about women's outside beauty, but it is really not true. It's not just about outside beauty. You have to know how to command the room, how to command stage, how to have confidence. I mean, if you look at any winners of any pageant, mostly they stand out because of their confidence, right?
Yeah.
And their wit and their mind as well. And there's a lot going on in backstage that audience doesn't see, what you don't see on stage. Because we are, I can say from my pageant, and I can also say the pageants that I have attended as an attendee, and I was backstage kind of understanding the workings in the back, what's going on. There's a lot of, I shouldn't say testing, but there's a lot the girls have to go through besides their beauty to even be selected to participate. So it teaches you so many things. It teaches you confidence, interview skills, public speaking, how to command stage, how to believe in yourself and how to sell yourself, believe it or not, because you are put in the position where in order for you to believe in me, I have to believe in myself. And you have to do that with a large crowd. You have to step out there and show them how much you believe in yourself. So those are all, and so many things in between, but those are probably the main skills that it provided me. And of course, you know, it gives you, especially when you're a teenage girl, it does boost your ego, especially when you win. There is no doubt about that. You know, there is an achievement aspect to it that I can't deny. But if you become a good student of it, besides the ego, you can really learn so much besides the superficial things, if that makes sense.
Exactly. You're right. And the things that you have said, the thing like a confidence to believe in yourself, these are the most important thing when you started to speak on the public speaking stages, and the belief and the confidence inside you will reveal your personality, that how you are, what you are, and actually how you can deliver yourself to the people, how you can help to the humanity, how you can help the world and the different people. And then people get inspiration from you. And then that's the moment when people will consider you as a personality. And it's awesome.
100%. You're right about that.
And you started all these things at the age of like 70s, or you're in mid-20s.
My first pageant was 16 years old. And then I had two more. I had won two more pageants consecutively. And so by the end of it, I was 18.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. It's the early age. And I can say this is the age when you have both of the chances, whether you are going good or you can decline in your career as well, and you choose the right and correct path. Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. You know, there was a, I guess later in the conversation we'll cover it, but you know, it was a short-lived career. Usually it is a short-lived career, but I think it gave me a lot of experience for that age.
Wow.
Yeah. And good came off of that too. I mean, when, especially when you win, there's a lot of exposure. I woke up the next day and the whole country knew my name, and wow, that can be exhilarating, but they can also be very dangerous, and we can get into if you want or not, because I think fame has its dangers.
I want to know about it because it is so important.
Yeah, so what happened is my Miss Georgia 1995, I woke up the next day and literally it was like an overnight fame. You know, I remember going to a store and everybody was staring at me and I didn't know why they were staring at me. Yeah. And I went home and I told my mom, and they're like, she's like, and by the time I got home, she was on the phone. Like, she was just one phone call after another. Okay. Everybody was just calling, congratulating and all that. And that does something to a child's psyche. I mean, I was a child, I was a teenager, and to a woman's psyche, you can, there is a saying that, you know, if you, the fame can define you, and how it's going to define you is who you're going to be as a person. You know, yes, a lot of times you have an opportunity to kind of go down on that route, because once you're famous, you have to stay famous. And that's the kind of the drawback of fame. You know, you will do, yes, things that will probably compromise your values or compromise something of you in order to kind of fit in the box or do something to stay famous, stay on that path. So I think when that happens to a child, it's a dangerous moment where, because when you're young, you don't have a sense of self. You're kind of, you're vulnerable. You easily swayed in any direction. So I just to be aware of that, it was a defining moment for me. I had to decide, like, okay, am I going to continue on this path, or am I going to do something else? I eventually chose to do something else. But yeah, there is that aspect of it that, yeah, it sounds all exciting, exhilarating, and amazing, but it comes with a price. And a lot of people have paid that price. We know many famous people who are still paying the price. And some of us are not with us anymore because they paid the price.
Exactly.
Won't name any names, but yeah, that's kind of a short thing about fame.
I am thinking about one of the sentence by my headmaster when I was in school and I got the first prize in my class. He said that, like what you have said, to get a number one is not a big deal, but to stay at the number one, that is the main challenge. And that is the responsibility as to get the number one.
Yes.
Awesome.
Totally. And that totally applies to any achievement, but especially fame. Fame is kind of different because, yeah, let's say you make $1 million. Now, how do you keep that? How do you multiply that? I understand that mindset applies, right? But
yes,
with fame, it's not the same path. Sometimes you have to, like I said, compromise on your values to meet your needs. And your needs, your immediate needs are, okay, I'm famous, everybody knows my name, how do I stay relevant and famous? Mm-hmm. And sometimes that comes with a dangerous, dangerous sacrifice.
Yeah, the consequences that I have seen a lot of famous personalities, I understand that. Mm-hmm. And this is awesome talk. So let's get ahead in this topic. And now we can see that you have choose the different career paths. And the things that is amazing about is that you choose what you love. You experimented on yourself and experimented on your career. But many people, they cannot do that. They cannot choose what they want to do actually in their life. And you choose that. And then eventually you moved from that portion of your life to become an entrepreneur, to become in hospitality industry. But now, my question is over here, how did you get this point of hospitality and services after getting this competition done?
Okay, so to make it kind of short, I had a choice to make to stay on that path of, you know, to stay in show business. And because I did, after the beauty pageants, I had many opportunities. I mean, I modeled, I did a little bit of acting, you know, there, it comes with territory. Everybody kind of comes to you with these different ideas. You know, they wanted to meet, they wanted me to be in a girl band. Like there was all these, you know, opportunities, right?
Yes.
And I tried to be in a girl band. It didn't work out because they wanted, they wanted to remake me. They kind of wanted me to fit into this. This is what I'm talking about. This, they wanted me to be in this, put me in this mold of a girl that was not me. And I felt very awkward. And in that meeting with the executives who were pitching me this girl band thing, I realized, you know, this is your chance. You know, are you going to sacrifice your soul or are you going to stay true to your soul? And that was kind of the decision for me. And I walked away from that career. I walked away because I knew that if I stayed on that path, I would have been a girl obsessed with fame, probably marrying some famous politico and quote unquote living happily ever after. And that's not what I imagined for myself. I was trying to still find myself, understand who I was, what I wanted, what was true to me. So I chose the path of leaving the country because I felt like I needed to get away from it all. There was nowhere to go because everybody knows your name. I'm not saying I was like a superstar, like, you know, Beyonce, where I needed an entourage. But everywhere they would recognize me and they would know my name and people would reach out to me and say, you know, why are you not taking this gig and that gig? Why are you declining this? Are you entitled? You know, we're giving you all this and you don't want to do it. What's going on? So I just felt like I was giving away bits and pieces of myself had I said yes to those opportunities that kept coming to me. And that as well as also combined with the political and economic situation too, it wasn't improving. So I didn't see a chance for me to stay in the country and exploit my gifts and even understand who I was. I felt like I needed to distance myself from that situation. So I decided to move. I decided to move to the US and start from zero. And hospitality industry was a very easy, very low bar to entry. You know, you can go and be a server and a bartender, and there's sometimes no bars to entry, depends on who you're working for. So that was an easy transition for me. It was more about survival than kind of figuring out what I wanted. It was not a passion of mine to be in hospitality in the beginning. It was more of a desperation and survival. Not even desperation, but survival, right?
Okay, and it's interesting. I have a couple of things to say right now. Then from your story, I can say you learn to say no to the things that you don't like, the things that is resisting yourself to becoming what you don't want to be in your life. And that is the most important thing. As I'm hearing lots of things from the different entrepreneurs, different people, they are successful in their life. And that's the same thing that you have said. You choose what you want to be, what you want to be in your life. You don't want to be like that band girl, but you want to do something. And then that name and the fame in that country, in Georgia, you just came here in United States starting from a zero. It's really, really difficult, I can say. It's really difficult.
It is difficult. I had no money. I had literally $40 in my pocket. And I had, and I had to spend 20 of it just calling my mom. You know, you're from India. You understand.
Yes.
We have the same kind of parenting, you know. Where are you? Are you going to call me? Are you there yet? So I had to, it was definitely starting from zero. And it is not easy. I mean, you're an immigrant yourself. You understand
yes.
that.
Yes, I totally agreed with you. And it's not easy while you are here, new people, new place, new environment, new things around you. And you have to crave your path in this all kind of difficulties. And you did it. Absolutely amazing this is. So let's go ahead with this stuff. And you choose this hospitality field. So can you say me something about that? What are the different aspects of the hospitality?
Sure. So that was my biggest realization after entering the hospitality field was that there is no hospitality in the hospitality business. There is no hospitality in the hospitality industry. We're not practicing it, right? We're saying it, but we're not really doing it. I define, you know, people talk about service and hospitality and they kind of bunch them together and they talk about it interchangeably. And I divide the two concepts. So what I say is service and hospitality are not the same. They're two totally different concepts of the business. Service is acts, tasks, and procedures that are done with consistency. Like right now, Umang, like you set up the microphone, we set up the Zoom call, we got all the logistics right. That would be service, right? If we didn't have that, we wouldn't be having this podcast. We wouldn't be talking right now. But hospitality is all about how do you make people feel while you're delivering that service. So, you know, your warm introduction, how you're speaking to me right now, how do I feel in your presence? That's you providing hospitality. And same happens when in any business, really. It doesn't have to be hotels or restaurants. It, it same happens with engineers in your space, you know. It's all about hospitality is the human element of any business.
Okay, so while you are providing the services, the regular thing that is described by the organization or the any kind of services, you are providing that. But while you are attaching yourself to that work, what you are doing and the emotion, it, this is the important fact you mean to say in the form of the hospitality?
Yes. So for instance, you know, if you go to a restaurant, a simple example, your server may, she will probably, or he or she will come and serve you your meal. She might be perfectly serving you your meal perfectly from the right. You might get a perfect, you know, white glove service anywhere, but they can make you feel like you're an intrusion, you're an interruption, versus making you feel like you belong there. They're actually anticipating you. They are dying to please you, not just satisfy you. They want you to feel like much better than when you entered the space. It's all about changing people's state while they are in your presence. And I define it as if services, acts, tasks, and procedures that are done with consistency, hospitality is, it's an emotional interaction between you and your customer, which assures your customer of their decision to do business with you. Does that make sense?
I understand.
It's emotional it's not a transaction. It's an emotional interaction or exchange that assures you as a customer of your decision to do business with me as a business.
Wow. This is so in-depth view that you have said right now. And it's, it need a deep thinking to understand this particular view. I understand that.
I'm trying to say it slowly. You know, it's, it has, you know, to break it down even further, I would, it has many components, but I always point out three components. And first component of hospitality is generosity. And generosity is not about giving away free food or drinks.
Okay.
Generosity is about assuming the best about people, their actions and their behaviors and their thoughts. You know, if you approach your customer with that in mind, if you assume that they are, their intent is not ill intent, they have a positive intent, then you're going to approach that customer completely differently, even if they're being negative, right? If you have somebody that's interrupting you, or if somebody that's not listening to you, or somebody that's demanding, or somebody that's impatient with you, and you think to yourself, I know they have a positive intent, you know, they're not listening to me because I bet somebody else has not listened to them. You know, you really have to really try to understand that person and at least know that they're not out there to destroy you and your business. They're trying to meet their needs, which is they want to be heard, seen, understood, and acknowledged. Most of the time, that those are the basic needs that people are trying to achieve, right? So the first component is generosity. Second component is empathy. And empathy doesn't mean you only step into their shoes. Empathy means first you listen, right? Because if you don't listen, you will not understand and you will not have empathy. Second is you recognize their emotions. And without listening, you can't recognize another person's emotions. And a third component of empathy is staying out of judgment. And that's a very hard thing to do because we're human beings and we're wired to judge, right? Everything is, we have an ego, which tells us good, bad, you know, go there, don't go there. There's a good person, bad person, you know, engage with this person, not engage with this person. Ego protects us. But when you are dealing with customers, you have to put your ego aside.
Yep.
So second component is empathy. And the third component is connection, creating connections. Mm-hmm. I always say there are so many ways you can create connections. Some of the ways is, you know, not using the one size fits all approach to with every one of your customers, you know, personalizing their experiences with you, understanding what they need, what they want, understanding their needs, deeply understanding them. Hell, knowing their names, right? You know, it depends on what your business is, but you're, as a business owner, you have to be constantly striving to create a genuine connection with your customers. So those are the three components of hospitality that I had to break in down: generosity, empathy, and connection.
Wow, this is amazing. I got you very clearly. And by these three steps, it's really easy for me to understand what is the hospitality is and how can I divide the difference, these two things, the services only and the hospitality, by which way I can become a more and more interesting in this subject particular. By generosity, you are getting a right mindset for your business, for your client, and by empathy, you are listening them. And it is the most important factor in every business. You have to understand what your customer need that. And then you can deliver them what they expect from you. And then the third one is the connection. By the connection, you can make a feeling. And that's how you are doing such an amazing work in that particular thing. So nice you are saying. And it's informative that to learn this thing, in every business, not only the hospitality business, but for like manufacturing, for like a aircraft industry, or I can say the computer science that are growing in the United States, every field, we need this kind of situation. This is awesome. So now, one important thing you have said that good services are bad for your businesses. Mm-hmm. And I heard this sentence and I was so curious that, no, I want to provide good services to my customers. I want to provide good services to my clients. And every entrepreneur, or I guess the small business industry level person, they think about how can we provide the good services to the people, to the customers, and use something different. So can you please explain me why?
Yes, I always, you know, I have a keynote speech that I give. It says, it's called "Good Service is Killing Your Business." And everybody comes to that talk because they're like, what is she talking about? Is this some, who is this woman? What are you talking about? So I give context. Good service is problematic. And I know what you mean and what others mean by, I want to provide good service. We all do. But what, I think what we mean is, I want to give a good experience, right? But I challenge, since I separate service and hospitality, I challenge that point because I say, you know, if you only give good service, you know, you are not really providing much, because by paying money, customers expect to get good service. You know, good service is nothing new. When you order something on Amazon, you expect it to be delivered to you on time within 1 or 2 days max, and not broken or damaged. I mean, you expect basics. So good service is really basics. When you want to fly to New York and your boarding pass says New York, you expect to get there with your bags intact, on time and safe. So by providing good service, we're not really providing much. It's an even exchange. I always say it's an even exchange. The customer got what they paid for. They got their money's worth, so to say. And then you kept your promise, right? There's no extra. There's no extra value added to what you just did. And hospitality, since we broke down hospitality, it's generosity. It's assuming the best about people, but it's also generosity in every one of its senses, right? You know, if there's no extra value, and usually that is the emotional part. If there is no emotional part provided with service, you really haven't done much. You've kept your promise, but you haven't provided the outstanding service that you want to provide. It has to be always paired with hospitality. Service alone is transaction. If you think about it, you know, when you get your money's worth, what happens? And there is no hospitality, there is no emotional aspect to your experience. It was a transaction, right?
Yeah.
Horse trading. You know, you give me this and I'll give you that. Bye, we're good. That is transaction. So if you want to be transactional, I don't associate transactionalism with longevity in business. It does not provide longevity in business. If you want to be successful, if you want to have longevity, if you want to be around 10, 20 years from now and beyond, you have to differentiate yourself. And I think in this economy, there's not a lot that you can differentiate yourself with. You know, there is great products. You know, you can make a great product, but somebody can copy that. I mean, there are only great products. I don't think we have bad products in this economy. I mean, I don't think anybody makes bad anything anymore, right?
Yes.
And only way you can stand out is by human aspect, if you think about it, right? So those are the things that I think are problematic with providing just good service. Because how many times, I mean, Umang, have you been to a restaurant where you sat there and nothing went wrong? You know, you got your food on time, everything was executed properly, but next time you want to go out, you're probably going to think of a different place. You're not going to be emotionally driven to go to the same place. You're going to be like, okay, well, let's see what else is out there.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think most of my experiences are that way, especially with restaurants, right?
Exactly.
It was okay. You know, nobody dropped food on me. You know, I wasn't upset. They did, quote unquote, did their job.
Yeah.
But nothing outstanding happened either. But on the other hand, when you get that hospitality, you have all these feelings like, oh my God, I felt like $1 million at that place. Wow. So they greeted me by my name. They know me. I feel like they know me, you know, and we return again and again and again.
Yes, I am totally agree with you because I have visited lots of restaurants. I can say the restaurant aspect right now, because when I visited some of them, I really know the name and the name of the manager itself right now, because they welcome me and they greet me very efficient, like very warm way. So I remember them right now. When the next time I choose, okay, let's go there. They are good people. Let's meet them. What they are talking about, how the behavior with this, and that thing matters a lot. So not only the transactional values you are sharing, but the emotion you will share, the small extra human efforts you will add to your services will make them with a hospitality, not just the good service.
Correct. I always say, you know, people go to a business, but they return to a human being. You know, you will go to a business to do business with them, but you will come back to a human being and do business with them that way. So I can't understand that fact.
I understand it. And it's really the thing that I want to quote it down, that the correct way to make yourself as a human, and business is the thing, but when you put that human effect on it, it will really show your personality, your business, and the name of your business. I totally agree with you right now. And now I want to say something like, let's say I have a scenario, something like this. I'm not a marketing manager, or I'm not a salesperson, or I'm not a waiter or a bartender. It means that I'm not directly contacting the customer or the client of my organization right now. Now, I'm the integral portion, or I can say I'm the integral part of my organization. So what happened? The different people in this organization, my boss, like my manager, or like a different other section of the organization, they are my clients because I am transactioning with them, not to the directly client. So in this situation, how the hospitality plays an important role, and how can I manage my behavior, my ethics, and also simultaneously, I want to say the emotion while I'm talking, while I'm converting my situations with my boss and all other clients.
So you're talking about how the hospitality serves you in relationship with your colleagues and bosses?
Exactly. Yes.
So a good question. So I think you're absolutely right when you say that those are your first customers. And in business, I should say that in business, no matter what business you're in, I don't believe in putting the customer first. I believe in putting your employees first, because your employees, your team, how you treat them is how they're going to treat the customer. You know, yep. The how you treat them determines the health of the organization and health of the culture. And your culture then determines your customer flow, or your money, your wherever your money's coming from, whether it's customers or whatever it is. So in your situation, if you're an employee, I think it's crucial that you develop and keep and nurture your relationships at work. And you can totally do that without, you cannot do that without hospitality. Yep. And how that shows up is, you know, again, the three elements, the generosity, empathy, and connection. You know, are you able to create that that connection with them? Are you generous in your assumptions about the boss that is breathing in your neck sometimes and micromanaging you, and someone that is annoying you? Or are you able to do that with your colleagues? You know, apply those three aspects of generosity, empathy, and connection. Are you able to use empathy when you're most annoyed? You know, when you have somebody that's annoying you at work, are you thinking like, oh my God, they're here to destroy me? Or are you thinking they probably are having a rougher day, and I know there is a reason why they're acting this way? Mm-hmm. And let me have some empathy. It doesn't mean that you take abuse, verbal abuse, or you succumb to them, but it just means sometimes the best empathy is to set boundaries. So there are so many ways you can use this, but the main idea is to understand that without hospitality, it doesn't happen. Hospitality is not just in restaurants and hotels. It's also at a place of work. It's about managing your relationships at work, basically. Does that resonate with you?
Yes, I can totally relate it with the different people. They are working in the organization. Then why your etiquettes, why your human feature in your talk, in your work is really important. While your connection, while you are making a different decision. And you say the empathy is really, really important section, I believe so, in the work culture, because everybody is there if it's thinking of to earn money. But while you are entering in this situation, earning money, but simultaneously to making a connection with your generosity by listening them empathically, is really affect a lot. And I can totally relate it with them. Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah, it's about emotional intelligence. You know, you have to develop emotional intelligence. And I think, you know, if you're in a workforce like yourself, you mm-hmm. know that most opportunities will come from other people, you know, so yes. You have to develop great relationships and great connections. Your best role, probably best job, is going to come from someone that you know, who knows somebody, who knows somebody. That's exactly. Really what happens. Like 80% of the jobs are not advertised, you know, yes. They're not put out there. So if people like you and trust you, then they will promote you. Then they will offer you the best job. So that's how hospitality is useful there.
Wonderful. And it's a tremendous, it's really, really useful for thousands of people now. And the next question is, you have said the customer service can be the dangerous for your business. Mm-hmm. Why and how?
Customer service?
Customer service.
Oh, surveys. Yes. I did write about that. And
okay.
There, I see it problematic for many reasons. First one, the biggest one is they don't really go anywhere. You know, most companies that you receive surveys from, do you really think, I mean, tell me a time when you received a survey, you filled out a survey, you told them what was not to your liking, and then the company went and improved on that thing. I mean, if somebody can think of a factual example of that, I would like them to email me, call me, let me know that that exists, because I have not encountered that in my career. What happens is we get these annoying surveys. Sometimes we're bullied into surveys. Sometimes we are given these cheap prices to fill out some survey. And then these surveys end up in the abyss, in a dark hole in the company. And they don't go anywhere. And it creates extra work for customers. And I believe in a different approach. I believe that if you want to improve your customer service, you want to get rid of the retention department. Like a lot of tech companies or telecom companies have retention departments, right? We're all familiar with those. You know, when your cable goes out and you call and they're trying to keep you. You want to run away, but they're trying to keep you. You know, a lot of companies invest a lot into retention of customers, but they don't invest into customer service and nurturing of the customers they already have. And I see that as backwards. You know, you probably know this yourself, Umang. I mean, I don't know who your cell phone carrier is, for instance, but you will call them and somebody in India will answer, which is fine, but they're not really invested in. These are not the people who can read you. They're kind of like robots. They're trained robots who are trained to keep you with a company, give you all kinds of discounts. And maybe that works for a moment, but it doesn't work for a long term. So, and also if as a customer, you receive this small, reward for filling out a survey, lose-lose, because as a consumer myself, you know, I'm only giving you a review or survey because you're giving me a price. Now, what are the chances that I'm being really authentic in my review? What are the chances that I'm giving you a correct, adequate review? I'm probably just doing that because I want some free cup of coffee or $5 or whatever that you're giving me for the survey. And you as a company, you're not getting a correct feedback. And then you're not doing anything with these surveys anyway. So generally, that is what I see happen. And I think that's backwards. You know, we want to keep the customers. We say that we want the feedback, but we are not asking for feedback in real time. And I think that's the solution. If you want feedback, you want to ask feedback from your loyal, most dedicated, most engaged customers that keep coming back to you. Mm-hmm. And or not, but the ones that are engaged and also the ones that are willingly giving those surveys to you, and also invest in your customer service and have people who really understand other people and request the feedback in real time while you're delivering the service. I see that as a solution versus sending out these paper or electronic surveys that people usually delete and do nothing with.
I totally agree with you. And to invest in the customer relationship worker that you are in company, it's really important thing that the people, they can understand other people, what they are thinking and how they should have to think in that particular way. Then and then you can grow. And also you said even most important thing, to get the review, to get the reviews with the rewards, that will not give you a good and accurate survey results. And I agreed with you. I totally agreed with you. This is a nice thing that you have said. And now when I go ahead with the situation and let's say we are in the ending portion of our session, I can say that now we are living under in the new era of the world. The new norms are delivering to us because of this COVID condition. And we all know that the hospitality industry have suffered a lot in this situation, because I was watching Airbnb show and the CEO of the Airbnb said there was like more than 90% of the decrease in the sales. So if we can understand that, it's a huge. So now how can we understand then? The hospitality sector, how can the customers, how can we give the perfect hospitality in this new era of the world? I can say the virtual era of the world.
So how we can be hospitable, are you talking about restaurants?
While we are in the virtual things, like many of the company, they are working virtually. Many of the restaurants, they are providing the other services by virtually, like you can order them and you can get the food, and then you cannot eat over there. You just need to go to your home. So in this situation, while we are in the restaurant, we are providing good services, or I can say the hospitality in the proper manner. But now we are implementing the new things over here, the virtual things, I can say. So how we can provide the hospitality in this virtual era?
Yes. And a lot of restaurants have done that, and some of them still haven't. And most of those restaurants that I see that are out of business or about to be out of business, I would say just double down on the virtual world, because I still see a lot of businesses resisting it. and especially in the hospitality industry, because usually, you know, there is a lag time between the technological advancements and the hospitality world kind of catching up. We're usually the industry, the hospitality industry, is usually like 20, 30 years behind. On tech and all the advancements in technology. So I would say you cannot provide hospitality if you don't adapt to new changes, if you're not nimble and adaptable and flexible and also open-minded. You know, 50% of restaurants have gone out of business, and that's a real number. It's actually 50% plus, but just to be safe, it's 50%. So a lot of our favorite places probably didn't survive because they were not nimble and adaptable, and they're still fighting the tech. They're still fighting and really going nowhere. So the way you provide hospitality in the virtual world is by becoming virtual, because when the market dictates what they want, when your customers tell you, my purchasing decisions have changed, my habits, my daily habits have changed, and now I order more than go out, for instance, you have to adapt to that. You have to welcome that and be open-minded instead of resisting it, right? And then double down on that and make that, make the tech as accessible as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, give them options, give them choices, make it easy for them to buy from you. That's the way you can do that in the virtual world, when it comes to restaurants, at least.
I understand. I totally agreed with you, because when you are giving them an opportunity to make their decision virtually very efficient way, then it's a good chance to grow in this particular field. So now I can say we got a lot of things, lot of things from your life journey, from your career, from your thinking, what you are think about this world while you entering in this hospitality industry. And you see there is no hospitality in the hospitality industry. And then you applied your own ideas, your own views, and you dedicated your life to think about it, to work on it, to help the others people. And you are helping right now. This is tremendous talk, I can say right now. So while getting this information, I learned a lot of things and a lot of things to note down on my personal journal as well. And now let's go ahead and get into the very interesting portion of our podcast. And it's really interesting because we are learning a new things from a different personality from all around the world, how they are behaving in their routine, in their life, so that we can get the inspiration from them. And you are the perfect for this. So let's start this. And the first question that I want to ask is, what's your morning routine?
Morning routine. So it's interesting. I don't know if I have a real routine. I wake up and I like quiet, uninterrupted time to myself every morning. And I sit there and I read and I plan out my day. And I usually don't want to be bothered. I don't want any noise or interruptions. That's probably the most routine that I have. I have my decaf almond latte that I make and I sit and I kind of I go between reading and planning out my day. And the biggest thing is, I don't know, it sets me up for the day in a way that I'm not interrupted. I'm not like scared away. I like to wake up slowly and kind of have this quiet morning to myself, if that makes sense. That's probably the most
No, I understand that. And when you are putting yourself in the silent situation, when you think about yourself and you are planning your day, it will reduce the things that you really don't want to do in your day. And that's how you can manage your day with a busy schedule. I totally agree with you. The second question is about, as an entrepreneur, what do you think, what is the most difficult task for you?
For me, it is repetitive tasks that take up a lot of time, or maybe they take up a lot of time for me because I'm not good at them and I don't enjoy them. Usually it's a tech related repetitive tasks that I have to do that I'd rather not do. My business.
I understand. Sometimes it's happened with us, with lots of people.
You're probably the engineer, so you're probably like, oh God, what is my world?
there are different problems that I don't want to do again and again. Okay, iteration after iteration. And that's why I stuck somewhere that I need help from someone. And that's the most difficult thing, I believe. So the third question is, how much time you spend to sleep?
I sleep 8 to 9 hours a night. And don't get me started about anybody rebutting me on that, because I think that sleep is very important. And we, in the US, we're so trained and conditioned to believe in teen no sleep, and sleep doesn't matter, and you sleep when you die. You've all heard them. But the thing is, if you don't sleep enough, it deteriorates every cell in your body. You will age, you will gain weight, you will get chronically ill. And we really underestimate that in the Western world, especially in the US. So I make it my business to sleep.
No, definitely. I agree with you that the things, the consequences that you have said about not sleeping very well is really right. I totally agree with that. And what's your favorite book and author?
There's so many. I would really struggle to like pick one. I'll tell you the last book that I'm reading that I'm really enjoying. I think it's very important for especially males to read. It's by Terrence Real, and it's called I Don't Want to Talk About It. And it talks about men, how men are conditioned to mask their feelings and not really... It talks about male depression and why is it so prominent in the US and in the Western world. And it talks about how we're socializing men and boys to kind of become these creatures of, you know, how violence sets in, how masculinity and violence are connecting, and how we're basically socializing them out of being themselves and creating quote unquote men. So it's a really interesting read. Right now that's my favorite, but I've read so many books. It would be really hard for me to pick one and say like, this is the holy grail of it all.
I think this book is really important for all of us because we need to understand. And I have seen this, the 90% of the suicide case is done by the male only.
And exactly. We talked about it in this book. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what I have read some of the areas. And I think it will be in my desk, right? Maybe within a couple of days to read about it, because I didn't read it. And it's a wonderful. Thank you so much for that. And yes, the last question of this podcast interview I want to ask is about, what's your ultimate goal in your life? Or I can say, how you want to help the world, the people inside the world?
Business-wise, what I want and what I wish for is for us as a collective to get away from being transactional and get away from numbers focus and become people focused. Because I believe that if we focus on people, numbers take care of themselves. Whether it's in your business, whether it's in your home, and we sort of have it backwards. We're so conditioned to go after results and numbers and, you know, hard stats that we really forget that people are the ones who are delivering those numbers. People are the ones creating those numbers, and we forget the people. And then we blame the people for not getting the numbers instead of nurturing the people. So I want every business and every household and every person to kind of adapt that into their mindset that people first, numbers second.
Wow, it's so amazing thing that as a human, we need to understand that humanity is the first, and then after all the businesses, all the money and all the achievements that we are getting right now.
That's right.
Wow, it's so awesome to talk with you. I learned a lot that I cannot even talk about. The concepts that was wrong in my mind about this customer service, about the good services, about the hospitality, about the different kind of businesses inside the organization, how to work, how to behave, how to connect with the people. They are awesome. So friends, I would like to say from Anna's talk, what we learned, that we want to become what we love to become. There are lots of different things and different people are there in our life. They will tell, they do something that what they want to like to you, but no, it's your choice. And Anna did it. You know, she did it. She was the Miss Georgia, but she chose what she want to do in her life. Okay. And that's why she's so successful right now in this stage at the level of she is helping thousands of people. She's delivering her speech. And we heard her on a very important and very amazing platform like a TEDx talk. What she said that it's a generosity. It's also the connection. It's also the empathy. That's the all factor that we need to imply in our business. Not in only our business, but also in our personal life to grow, to think, and to feel that how the humanity is important for us, how this world is for us, not only the business, the numbers, as what Anna said, not only the number, but human factor is also affecting a lot. And when you start to apply it on your business, when you start to apply it in your life, when you start to apply in this relationship as well, you are not just transacting the values, but also the emotion with your human factors. And this will create your personality amazing. So from Anna, I learned a lot and a lot. So please, you also will learn while you follow her Instagram, her Facebook, and many other videos like she is sharing on YouTube as well. So go and check it out. You can find all the links in the description. So thank you so much, Anna, for your support, for your talk, for your really, really amazing and tremendous talk for today. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Uman. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. So don't forget to subscribe and follow us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Anchor. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, Podchaser, Pocket Cast, Breaker, and also on YouTube. And if you like to read something about this episode, you can easily find the keynotes of the episode on our blog. You can get more information in the description. So please go and check it. So stay tuned with us to learn world's powerful techniques, strategies, skills, information to get the virtues of life.